It's time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors, brought to you by the Cabins at Bear River Lodge. 2 hours of stories and information about hunting, fishing, and high adventure. It's KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, Russell, guess who we've got on the line now? It is Brother Matt Smith, who we attempted to connect to last week or the week before and failed to make a connection. But, Matt, I guess that's because you're in the middle of another day of riding that bike.
Yeah, well, we're done for the day. But, yeah, it's hit and miss up here, too. I mean, it's definitely spotty reception.
Yeah. Before we get into where you are today, let's not get too far into the weeds yet. Let's find out what this thing is you're embarking on and how long you've been at it and how the heck did you come to this idea?
Oh, well, so we left on the 8th of August, and we've just got a little bit more here. I think we're done on the 25th, I guess. And we wanted to do a tour where instead of racing bikes, we just kind of took it easy. And I thought we would be camping every night. My wife informed me that if we were going to do this, we needed to slum it in hotels every night. So planning it and making sure we got to each spot every day is, I guess, was one of the challenges. You know, if you're camping, you can just pretty much stop anywhere if you have to. But we didn't have that kind of gear with us.
Yeah. You live up in Rexburg, right?
Yeah, so we left from – that was one of the things we really wanted to be able to do is leave from Rexburg and not have to travel by plane or have someone drop us off on the coast or anything. So for this tour, we left right from Rexburg and went through West Yellowstone.
All right, so the 8th, let's see, 15, 20 – you're almost 2 weeks into this thing.
Yeah, we are. We're on our last, last bit here, I guess. You could say.
Yeah.
And some of the longer rides, too. We had two super long ones the first 2 days, over 80 miles, and then we have a few 60s and 70s here left. So.
Well, congratulations on getting your wife involved.
Thanks.
With this, or was it her idea?
it's both. We ride together, and she actually has become a stronger rider than me, so I'm usually following her up these hills.
Yeah.
She usually waits for me at the top. So
that's the way Becky and I are. It's the tortoise and the hare. She just, is steady as she goes, and she passes me at some point because I'm gassed out. But I do a number on her on the downhill side, so she expects that.
Right. Yeah, right. If it is a downhill, she'll usually look at me and go, "You going first?" And I'll go, "Oh, yeah." Because, Wade always wins on that one.
But, yeah.
I did find out that the reason she's been beating me up these hills is she's been putting her Q-tips in my bags. And I've watched over the last week or so, my Q-tip bag keeps getting bigger and hers is empty. So I'm pretty sure that's been the problem.
She's passing along the supplies to you, huh?
Yeah.
When you set out from Rexburg, what was the plan? Where did you want to go to, and what did you want to see?
Well, we had some spots we definitely wanted to see. We were going to go up to Bozeman, and then I don't know all the names of the towns, but end up on East Glacier. One of our buddies from Montana said, "No, you don't want to go that way. It's not as pretty. You should go." And he gave us, so we ended up going up over through Helena and then up to West Glacier instead. And so stayed in some real small towns with just, one or two motels to Helena with a bigger town. And so we went that route. We wanted to see Montana.
So you were on the, you were on the Whitefish side then.
Yeah. So we, we went through Bozeman. We went through Helena. Had some great adventures in that area we can talk about, I guess. But and then we went up through Big Fork and then Glacier, stayed there in West Glacier, and then we ended up up in Eureka and Libby, just up by the border of Canada, and then Bonner's Ferry, and now into Idaho, and now down to Sandpoint is where we're at now.
So did you ride around Flathead? That's one of my favorite motorcycle rides.
No.
Okay.
I'm sure it was with a motor. No, we just came up the side there from a little town called Sealy Lakes.
Right.
To which is a pretty little area there, really. But yeah, and then just ended up in Big Fork, and then did a ride, a beautiful ride from Big Fork to West Glacier.
I think that's the same area that some of A River Runs Through It was filmed up in there, which is gorgeous.
Oh.
Yeah, it's gorgeous territory.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was. I think our favorite, and maybe you're going to ask this, but I think one of our favorite rides was West Yellowstone that morning, going by Hebgen Lake and then heading to Bozeman. The first 30 miles of that, we've had several rainy days in the mornings where it's been misty and the clouds are low and just beautiful and quiet. And you know, later the traffic hit and it was pretty ugly the last 30 miles, but beautiful ride. And same with just so impressed with the area, like Big Fork to West Glacier, just amazing area, you know, deer running through all the fields, all that kind of stuff. Just really pretty.
Yeah. Were you guys avid riders? I mean, you'd have to have been. Were you avid riders before this?
Well, we've done Lotija. I've done the full Lotija twice. I didn't finish it 1 year. I didn't quite make it.
Which is what? Tell people what that is.
Oh, well, the Lotija is the race from Logan to Jackson Hole, 206 miles. You do it in 1 day. It's rough. I mean, it's definitely a painful ride. Some guys are fast. I mean, I'm certainly not out to win anything, but it's a great day. And I've done it with a group of friends that we've been riding together. And then we do a lot of hundreds, you know, usually three a year, four a year, and then, just some century rides. And then, but we typically go out and ride 30 or 50 every other day in the summer, just in the morning early in Rexburg.
Yeah.
So that's the conditioning, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so tell everybody where you are now, 2 weeks into this, and what's left of the adventure.
So I'm actually sitting in a beautiful spot here in Sandpoint. I'm at a hotel that's right on the lake, and I'm looking out over a marina full of boats, and it's about as picturesque as you can get.
Yeah, Sandpoint, Idaho.
Sandpoint,
Idaho, beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's great. And we've had a few different spots like this, but yeah, so we're going to a little town tomorrow. I think it's 66 mile ride to Trout Creek. And then on to a hot springs called Quinn Hot Springs, another 60 or so miles, and then into Missoula.
No.
So that's kind of our, and then we head down from Missoula towards Salmon.
I might even be able to get you a greeting party in Missoula if you want it. My brother lives up there, and he cooks a mean barbecue.
So that's our anniversary. We roll into Missoula. We're going to spend a couple days there, and we've done that twice now. We've spent 2 days in Whitefish and 2 days in Glacier, so we could go do some hikes, and now we'll do the same in Missoula.
Yeah,
a little day off here to relax, I guess.
So will you ride all the way back home, or where do you stop and how do you get the bikes back?
Okay, so we originally were going to try and do that. It's really difficult from Salmon, Idaho to Rexburg. There's really nothing in between to sleep at or anything, and it's 100 and something miles. So we actually decided, we booked a night in Darby, which is outside of Hamilton, outside of Missoula.
Yeah, I know right where
south.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty area, but we're kind of thinking we may be done by Missoula. We may spend an extra couple days and just have one of the guys that works for me just come pick us up.
Well, I'm telling you, when you get to Darby and Hamilton, then you climb over that Lost Trail Pass, that'd be a good haul on a bike.
I know. That's the thing. I mean, we did a couple 80 milers to begin with, and by the time we rolled into where we were staying, it was like just, you know, get something to eat and just go to bed.
Yeah.
And that's been the one thing that I haven't liked is you know, on a motorcycle, I'm sure that wears you down too, but you know, when you cars and motor, anything with a motor on it, I guess you can get there and kind of enjoy the time there, but we've been pretty beat on a few of these rides.
One of my favorite pictures with your brother is sitting on our motorcycles at the top of Lost Trail Pass, right on the state line there, and we're sitting in snow on our motorcycles, which was not a great surprise.
You know, a couple of things that happened to us. We were in a town called Townsend, and it's by the Missouri River and just out of Bozeman a ways. And that was where we spent the night. And when we rolled in, it looked pretty decent out. And I don't know, we'd gotten something to eat. We were showering, cleaning up. And all of a sudden, we thought someone was on the roof. And the clouds had come in, and the hail was coming down. I actually have a picture. It's over twice the size of a quarter, the hail that was coming down. I've never been able to look almost straight up. I couldn't look up because I was under a porch, but looking up so high and seeing hail so high up in the air that you could identify it was coming down. It was just like golf balls everywhere just landing. All the cars in town were dented. Never been in a storm like that before.
Then
we rolled into Helena the next day, and it looked like it had snowed. There was hail everywhere.
Well, thank goodness you were done with your ride then. At least for the day. Yeah, crazy. That sounds like another experience your brother probably told you about of our slingshot ride when we were just outside of Sturgis in South Dakota, and there was a hailstorm that filled up a parking lot in a hurry and was lodging softball-sized hailstones into windshields of cars in the parking lot. We barely made it out of that one alive, too. All right, so last question, how's your butt?
Sure. Yeah, sore. I'll tell you, anyone that wants to do this, you know, that first week, keep it at 30 or 40 miles a day. It really does wear on you. And I wish I'd had – my wife has one seat she loves, and she's bought it for every – we have four different bikes. We both have four bikes. And every one of her bikes has that same seat.
Mm.
And I didn't do that, and I wish I had.
No.
But it's good. It's painful some days,
yeah,
but we're getting through it.
Well, as you said, once you've got that sore down there, it's hard to get it to recover when you got to get back on the bike the next day.
It is. There's a little wincing there
yeah.
The first few miles. But,
well, man.
You break into it.
What a great experience for you and your wife to do together, and hope you have a great anniversary, couple of nights stay there in Missoula, and we really appreciate you sharing the adventure with us.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate talking to you. It's great to be outdoors.
All right. Brother Matt Smith with us here this morning on KSL Outdoors Radio. Hang on. We'll come back, and we've got Fish Bites. Navi will help me with that next.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
KSL Outdoors, brought to you by the Cabins at Bear River Lodge. 2 hours of stories and information about hunting, fishing, and high adventure. It's KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, welcome back. It is time for some fish bites this morning. If you didn't see it, take a look over your shoulder and look at that 10-pound rainbow that came out of Strawberry this week. That is Brother John from Paul Phillips' family up there, John Phillips. And a guy named David used some garlic power bait to catch a 10-pound rainbow. Look at the size of that thing. So there's still some big fish to be had up there.
There ain't nothing garlic power bait can't get.
Seems to be the key right now.
I take it to the movies and dip it.
Yeah, dip.
There's a story, fish and I know... Dip. We've had some spirited conversation behind the scenes about this situation in Alaska when it comes to global climate change and the heat and the effects that it's having on the fisheries up there. But this one started getting attention this week, Navi, and we've had conversations off the air about it. But the water is so hot, at least in parts of Alaska,
that it's killing large populations of the salmon. They had a count of 850 dead unspawned salmon on one of their expeditions, and the scientists that were up there said it's likely 4 to 10 times larger than that. And Stephanie Quinn Davidson, who is the director of the Yukon Intertribal Fish Commission, was being interviewed on CNN about this. But, you know, we had this situation come up in, was it Montana a couple of years ago, where there was a lack of water, and then the water heated up, and we started seeing die-off?
Yep, they stopped. They curtailed fishing for a while. I mean, Pymu, those crappie are dying, too, for the same reason.
Yeah.
And the blue-green algae, oh, my gosh, it's up at... what's the one up there in Manaway? Manaway, I guess.
Well, it's called Manaway.
Yeah,
Manaway.
It's got blue-green. They tested it this week.
But they were talking about the Cook Inlet. I don't know if you're familiar with that
one. Sure.
Located south of Anchorage. They've been checking temperatures in that stream since 2002 and never recorded a temperature above 76 degrees Fahrenheit water temperature.
Wow.
Until now. And a lot of these fish, as you can see the photo there, still had their eggs in. So they... You know, the oxygen levels in the water go way, way down. They didn't have the energy to spawn, and they ended up just dying there.
Yep.
Some good news, however, in other places in Alaska, this time Bristol Bay, that which happens to be the largest sockeye salmon fishery in the world, is actually seeing boom times right now.
Well, that's good. Yeah, but that's the most endangered river drainage in the world because of the proposed dam.
Yeah, they're still fighting the mine up there, too.
Yeah, the mine is...
What, was it a dam or a mine?
It's a mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest fight ever. And everybody's participating. I got a lot of emails from regular anglers all over the lower 48 who realize that everybody has to step up. And, you know, my sons have had for years no pebble mine. That's the name of the proposed mine.
Yeah.
For years, and it's still a battle. They want to ruin that fishery for all the ore that's in the soil up there.
Yeah. But the good news is they said a couple of years ago, 2016, they celebrated the 2 billionth salmon caught in the waters over there in Bristol, and that the populations still are doing as well as they have for a long, long time.
That's the greatest fishery in the world right there.
Yeah.
You guys were there. You should know.
Yeah, we were close to – we never made it to Bristol Bay, but we were
Bristol
close.
Bay is right there where the Dillingham, right exactly where you flew in. That's Bristol Bay.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on the water. You were you were 100 feet from the water.
Yeah.
A couple of notes here, too. Pelican Lake made some news this week from the Division of Wildlife Resources. You might remember it used to be a great place to catch bluegill.
That was a nice bluegill.
And bass until a carp took over. And look at the water condition that it caused then. So last year, you might remember, the fall of 2018, they treated the lake to remove all of the fish out of there. And... with the help of, they said, some great partners, they started over. Look at the size of that bluegill that they put in there. Anyway, they said hopefully within the next couple of years, soon,
it'll come back.
You'll be able to catch some nice-sized fish up there. The small fish, they said, have plenty of plankton to feed on. So
it's a great little fishery.
Pelican Lake is on its way back thanks to the efforts of the Division of Wildlife Resources. And then there was one more here that I wanted to bring attention to because this time of year we focus on the high mountain elevation lakes like Lakeshore Lake in the Uintas. But they've put some muskies up there.
Where? Which lake?
One called Lakeshore Lake in the Uintas, as well as a couple hundred in Donkey Lake and Mooseman Lake. But they figure these tiger muskie will eat some of the brook trout in the lakes.
You think?
That then will leave room for these other brook trout to grow bigger because they've been stunted in growth just due to populations.
Yeah.
And since... the tiger muskies are sterile fish. They can readily, you know, control the populations.
No fish more than the brookie competes with itself. They're absolutely cannibalistic. I don't think I've ever caught a brook when my polarized lenses had watched three or four chasing it. You know, it's like, hey, look, Barnes is in trouble. Let's eat him.
It's like a scene from Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're hoping that not only will this help the populations of the of the brookies that are left behind by the tiger muskies, but in a couple of years, you're going to be able to go to these high mountain lakes and actually catch some sizable tiger muskies.
It's an interesting experiment. It'd be interesting to watch what happens there.
They're fairly confident that it's going to do what it's supposed to do. Anyway, there's your fish bites for the week, unless you had something else you wanted to add
bites.
In there.
Okay, let me tell you, get out there right now. The hoppers are crazy in the lowlands. So they were in the high country. Fishing was phenomenal. Well, they're down low. You got the Provo. You got the Weber. You got the Ogden. You got the Logan. Blacksmiths. They are all on fire right now with hoppers. You really can't miss. There's so many hoppers in the sticks that the fish are just gorging on them. So get out there right now. Drift that hopper or take a net with you and catch hoppers as you walk to the river and stick them on a hook because you can't miss right now. Hoppers are on fire.
This is fly fishing for dummies like me.
It doesn't matter. As long as you put them back, I'm fine.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I've been telling you this for years, that my brother, who now has a piece of property up there just outside of Blackfoot, Idaho, right along the Snake River.
Right.
Still struggles to catch fish in that area. And I said, I need to get a weekend where I can convince Navi, if you'll just cook some steaks on the grill, I'll get him out there and he'll show you how to catch fish along this stretch of river.
Well, my boys know that stretch very well. In fact, they may be very near one of their secret spots.
Really?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Maybe we can plan a weekend
to
run up there.
In fact, they haven't even told me the name of it, so.
All right.
Because their dad gives away secrets.
Yeah. Doesn't keep them very well. We'll take a break. ABC News at the top of the hour. The Division of Wildlife on the other side. We'll talk about cougar hunting in Utah. So stay with us.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.